It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A little bit of relief has arrived in the hills and hollers of almost level west by Cold Trump Virginia, Stan. Yes, yes, indeed. It has rained all day long. It is a positively frigid 77 degrees in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. And doing the program without, you know, sweating out 5 pounds of water, might make for a slightly more comfortable next 3 hours, at least here. Yeah, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And this program, like every other one, begins with gratitude. Thanks. Thanks going out over the course of the weekend and today to Bill in Florida, to Michael, to Jamie, to Tirani, to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of California, to Joan in Talibandiana, to our buddies at Shadow Mountain Graphics, to Dr. John, to Bernice, to Vincent, to Carl, and Armand. That's our subscribers for the... to James, and... No, okay, so that's... All right. Yep, we're all caught up. Thank you. Thank you to our subscribers. Where are we? Well, we come into the evening minus 270. And to finish the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that finishes the month of July, and then we have fundraising free radio for a week, 670. So slice it however you wish. We've got 670 to finish the month, and have fundraising free radio, 270 we need to raise this evening. And come Wednesday, I have to pay our ginormous, monumental, gargantuan, terrifying internet bill, which means that if we don't raise it, probably no program on Thursday. That's just, you know. Because somehow or another, I can't convince them to give us internet based on my good looks. Maybe it's because I'm a little short on the good looks department, but, you know, who likes to tell themselves that? That's where we are. If you want to help out, run over to the contribute tab at headon.live. Also there, you can jump onto the chat room tab and jump into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place every evening when this program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific. If you jump in, pick out a screen name and password, well, Anatole's waiting there to say howdy. So's Jimmy, so's Squeaky, and so's Will in Chicago. And, of course, you will be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and become Man Cave. I don't think it's raining there, but it's probably just hotter than hell, and good idea to stay inside in the air conditioning. So that takes care of most of the housekeeping. Moran's O'Plenty. Oop, I forgot something. Stand by. I forgot one of my devices, and I had to text Agnes. Yes, we text each other in the house. It beats, you know, shouting or whatever. Yeah. But that's okay. It's just a little bump in the road. Now, where to begin? Morans. A week or so, a couple of weeks back? Because truly it does all run together. I wanted to mention something. This goes to the fundraising issues. I checked in with Brother Deacon Asa. And if you try to use the contribute tab there with the interface at headon.live to help keep the program going, and you've either disabled cookies or you use an ad blocker browser extension, that will error out on you every time. So if you're that probably explains why I was getting some messages from folks saying it's erroring out. So just, you know, turn off the ad blocker, the whatever, long enough to do that, turn it back on, you're fine. Thank you, dear.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Say hi.
Hi.
There goes Agnes saying hi. I guess she's not feeling very chatty today.
They're what?
Not feeling very chatty today.
Dobby has a day off.
Oh, Dobby's got the day off. Dobby produced Dr. Bill and Dobby's off the clock now. Is that it?
That's right.
Okay. That explains why, you know, some folks have been having trouble kicking in. Okay, like I said, Moran Monday. Might as well do this the right way, hadn't we? Why not?
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. Behind this thin, cybernetic veil of canvas, just a few mere steps off the Carnival Midway, it's waiting for you. That's right. The Moran Monday tent is open and eager to play host and show you all the myriad bizarre, weird twistedness that exists in the minds of the birthers, the deathers, the birchers, the baggers, the booger eaters, the libertarians, the maggots, the trumpansies, the republicans, one conservatives, one and all. It's all waiting for you here. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, yes, yes. For the average subscriber who kicks into the tune of $10 a month to help keep the horn going, well, that works out to less than the cost of a half of a deep-fried, artery-hardening McDonald's hash brown patty, less than half of that per day. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. There's no greater bargain on the Carnival Midway. You're far better off coming over to the Moran Monday tent than you are, say, flinging ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain and otherwise really incomprehensible attempt to take home a little baby iguana that will soon grow to be the size of a Volkswagen and probably eat your cat. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. One little warning, word of warning, it goes out as you enter the Moran Monday tent. Keep a close hand on wallets, purses, watches, rings, necklaces, other jewelry, children, pets, even that iguana you won throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls. Yes, and even European-style messenger bags. Keep a close hand on them, because the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And today is certainly no different. Oh, no. What I was asking a little bit ago, do you remember a couple of weeks back? And thank you very kindly to Glenn for getting us started this evening. So we're now down to $260. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very, very much. And that's 260, and hopefully Glenn will get a lot of company. We'll knock that out and not be sweating whether or not there will be a program come
Thursday. Not sweating is really a great way to run a little non-capitalist radio enterprise. Effort. Not even an enterprise. Effort. So, a couple of weeks ago, we had that story, that terribly, terribly mysterious story that had us all tied up in knots as to just exactly what could have precipitated it, when Vice President of the United States, Mike Pencilneck Geek, was off to New Hampshire to celebrate that triumphs in that state over the opioid crisis, and then he got called back for a sudden meeting with his boss, Nitwit Nero. We all remember that, right? Yes, certainly. Well, we were all wrong. I, for one, thought that Donald Trump had finally taken his clothes off in the Oval Office and was standing there babbling gibberish and playing with himself, because, well, he's capable of that. God knows he's capable of that. Some thought that maybe that they brought him back to, they brought Pence back to tell him that, well, no, he wasn't going to get to be vice president in the second Trump term, and instead he was going to be sent to a large, happy farm somewhere upstate where he could play out the remainder of his days. And neither of us were correct. None of us were correct. I don't think anybody had the correct answer, because the correct answer was at the same time more prosaic and also lots funnier than what it turned out to actually be. And the reason for that, well, late in the process, see, he was, Pence was going to, because he's a moron, Pence was going to go to New Hampshire, and he was going to, meet and greet, and of course, probably take credit for any diminution in the opioid crisis that burns up rural New England and other parts of New England just as it burns up Appalachia. The only problem, according to the story in Politico, was that among the problems was a federal law enforcement probe involving individuals Pence would likely encounter, according to a law enforcement official briefed on the incident. If Pence stepped off the vice presidential aircraft, one of the people he would have seen on the ground was under investigation by the Drug Enforcement Administration for moving more than $100,000 of fentanyl from Massachusetts to New Hampshire. That would have been former New York Giants football player Jeff Hatch. Because he's pled guilty now to drug trafficking charges before the federal court. And he's looking at 4 years in the stir and $250,000 fine. Back in 2017, Hatch was busted with 1,500 grams, not milligrams, grams of fentanyl. When the usual sale amount is about a tenth of a gram of fentanyl on the streets. And he had, he had trafficked it, as they say in the statute, from Massachusetts to New Hampshire. And he was going to get all, he was going to get to shake old Mike Pencilneck Geek's hands. They got enough problems with members of this administration getting, well, photographed or seen or witnessed in the company of people who turn out to be, philanderers, pedophiles, thieves, because that's who they are. For instance, it turns out that a few years back, after he got out of jail, there was a party thrown for Jeffrey Epstein. Stein, Stone. And it was at a showing of a movie that was then out. And, one of the Koch brothers was there to party with Jeff. So was Wilbur, kills coal miners, Ross. And, of course, then no party would be complete without Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. The party was hosted by David and Julia Koch after a screening of Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps. And Rudy Giuliani was there. Lots of other glitterati. And they just can't... this administration can't help swanning around with deeply skeevy people, because it's headed by the skeeviest man in America. Wall Street Journal wrote about the party at the time and said that Giuliani and Epstein chatting away, and one wag looking on said, "It's a beautifully done meeting of the prosecutor and the felon." Henry Kravis, billionaire, was there. Steve Schwartzman. Peggy Siegel, a publicist, was there. Yeah. They can't help it. And so you can understand how when they, because they don't do homework, they don't pay attention, they're just a sort of a bull in a booger shop, you know, just flinging horns everywhere and no care for nothing. Nothing. You know, why bother to look into it? This is an administration that sends Stephen Miller out to defend kids in cages. I mean, for Christ's sakes. Yeah. So having Mike Pencilneck Geek sort of swelling around with a guy who was a fentanyl dealer when he was up there to take credit for reductions in the opioid crisis. Well, that they caught that one early, or early-ish, as it goes for this gang of ne'er-do-wells. Jesus. Hey, thank you, Michael. Thank you very kindly to Michael for jumping in on and helping us knock down the fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly. So that means we got 2:35 to go to finish the evening. 2:35. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Very kindly indeed. I just thought that was a good starting point, you know, trying to keep Mike Pence from hanging out with a soon-to-be convicted fentanyl dealer. Grams. Is that what I said? 1,500 grams? Yeah. 1,000 grams is a kilogram. That's a kilogram and a half? So that's about 3.3 pounds of fentanyl? Yeah. Okay. Oh, but by the way, since we're dealing with Mike Pence, we should probably also note that in the near future, because the goddess of irony never misses a lick, this evening, Mike Pencilneck Geek will be in Aspen, Colorado. And he'll be headlining at a $35,000 a couple fundraiser. The invitations were sent out by Bob Jenkins, the vice chair of Pitkin County Republicans. An intimate high-dollar reception is what he called it. And he said, we would like you to participate if possible. Additionally, please quietly spread the word. Now, why would I say that the goddess of irony misses nothing? Well, you know, Mike Pencilneck Geek is a notoriously manly man who's scared shitless to be alone in a room with a woman who isn't mother. Not mother? No, Murgatroyd, not mother. Well, the problem is that the private club where they're doing the $35,000 a couple intimate fundraiser is owned by a gay couple. Look, everybody wants to make money. And maybe some members of the gay community might want to reach out to these two guys and say, yeah, it's pretty scummy of you letting your facilities be used for a noted homophobe, but, you know, that's not my job. But don't worry. It's a per-couple fundraiser, so that means that Mike Pencilneck Geek won't have to run the risk of being alone in the room with any women's, or one woman's at a time. And in exchange for the $35,000 contribution, he will return only the firmest and most manly of entirely non-homoerotic handshakes. And he will not put his hand on anyone's shoulder. He will merely shake their hands firmly and will not titter in any way or otherwise fail to look people in the eye or be bashful or blush in the presence of it. No, absolutely not. Will not happen. 35 large. Mm-hmm. In case you are wondering what the name of this place is, it's the Caribou Club in downtown Aspen. And it all came out, it all became public after a strange event. Oh, no, a disturbing event. A man was arrested early this past Friday on charges of felony assault and domestic violence. A female friend of the chef said that he had choked her and punched her in the face. What's this got to do with Mike Pence? Wait. When he was being arraigned, the chef told District Judge Chris Selden he was cooking for the vice president on Monday and needed to be able to show up for work. That, according to the prosecutor in the case, Don Nottingham. Nonetheless, even though the chef was arrested for beating on a woman, Mike Pence has at this hour not bowed out of the event or... No. Of course, we don't necessarily know if Mike Pence knows that the Caribou Club is owned by a couple of gay guys, and maybe it doesn't matter because maybe it's really just all about the damn money. Okay? Yeah. Well, and speaking of not putting hands on shoulders or such like, Jane Mayer at the New Yorker, a woman who has done masterful work in the Me Too movement and in exposing sexual sleazery, especially among our so-called betters. The New Yorker published an article of hers today in which someone has finally done the grunt work of sorting out just exactly what happened and how what happened to Al Franken. Our pal Johan in Colorado sent the story along to me. I was reading it even as he emailed me. And I wrote back, yep, day late, dollar short. But it becomes glaringly apparent that, yes, Al Franken, he got crucified. He got the shaft. And that it was a very deliberate thing. Jane Mayer does a good job of pointing out what the Tweeden woman, her history of being a right-wing shill and a right-wing tool, and how they orchestrated the release of the information over the course of months, how they did not reach out to Franken's office for comment before publication, which is what a real journalism outfit would nominally do, but instead published it as a troll piece that caught fire. And she went to the trouble of looking into the other allegations. Remember, one of the things for which Al Franken was run out of the Senate was an allegation that he touched a woman's waist. You know, in a photo crush. Hauling people in for a photo. He put his hand around her waist and pulled her in close. There are hundreds, if not, and probably thousands, of photographs of Al Franken doing something similar. Darlene says, I want to read it, but the New Yorker was blocking me as I don't have a subscription. I don't have a subscription either. It showed up in my newsfeed on my phone, and bang, I just opened it. If you use Apple News, you should be able to find it there, maybe. If you go down Jane Mayer's timeline on Twitter, the link she tweeted out at first didn't work, but there's one further down in the thread that does. It's a sickening display of political calculation and cowardice. And probably, I know a lot of people reserve a great deal of blame in this for Kirsten Gillibrand. But if you read this article and you come away with anything other than the idea that Charles Schumer is anything other than a slimy... backstabber, rib shiver, then you're kind of missing the point of the article. Because even as Franken was begging to simply have an ethics hearing, the Upright Christian and One Buddhist Ladies Brigade, who had previously begun calling for his resignation, they had already done their work with Schumer, and Schumer, as reported in the article, told Franken he had until 5 p.m. to get out of the Senate, or he was going to have the entire caucus, every Democrat in the Senate, call for his resignation. Franken now says he regrets having resigned. I do too. 7 members of the United States Senate say they now regret having joined the lynch mob call for him to resign. And I don't throw that term around. but it, even if you take the word lynch off of the front of it, and probably should, it was a mob mentality. And mobs, well, as you recall, the constable in Young Frankenstein saying, "What? An ugly thing." Yes. And mob mentality is never good. We saw it on display last week with the "send her back" chant. It's a long read because Jane Mayer did her homework. She did work that most journalists at the time simply could not be bothered to do. And she did it well. I know she did it well because Amanda Marcotte over at Salon immediately had a conniption, a full-on hissy. Trying to re-crucify Al Franken. And in an era of Jeffrey Epstein and a still unrepentant and unpunished sexual predator in the White House, it was not a good look for Amanda Marcotte. It just wasn't. She's a fine writer, and her talents would have been far better expended doing something besides trying to troll Jane Mayer for finally actually doing the job of journalism. Among other things, Marcotte said, "Well, considering what happened to Gillibrand, it's no surprise lower-level progressive women weren't willing to speak up." What exactly happened to Kirsten Gillibrand? Was she run out of town on a rail? Tarred and feathered? No? You mean she's still the junior senator from the state of New York? You mean she's still going to be the junior senator from the state of New York for as long as she wants? You mean she's still got everything she's ever wanted or desired? You mean she's still got her perfect family and she's still got a wonderful spouse and they still live in a magnificent home and she's still making scads of money? And did I mention she's still a member of the Senate of the United States? Oh, how about the fact that she's running for president of the United States and largely did so by climbing over Al Franken's, onto Al Franken's back to do it? What did happen to Kirsten Gillibrand? Precisely nothing. She's still the same Kirsten Gillibrand who, when she had little children in her home, bragged because she needed the support of the NRA in her upstate New York hillbilly district. Bragged she kept not just one, but two loaded rifles under her bed in case someone decided to home invasion her. And she's also the same Kirsten Gillibrand that, while in private practice as a lawyer, defended executives from Big Tobacco against charges that they, the Big Tobacco execs, had openly lied to Congress when they answered questions in congressional hearings and said that they, the Big Tobacco executives, had no idea, no earthly idea, no clue, not even a hint, that there was a link, a scientific link, between smoking and cancer, when everybody in the country knew that they knew, and they sat there and just lied to Congress. Kirsten Gillibrand defended them in that. Because Kirsten Gillibrand, when she got her law degree from the University of California, Los Angeles, she didn't run off and become, a legal aid attorney helping single mothers stay in their homes or get debt relief. She didn't become a public defender to try to provide some modicum of something resembling justice to poor people charged with crimes. Hell, she didn't even become a prosecuting attorney so that she, see that the laws of the United States are faithfully executed and criminals are locked up and kept off the streets. Dum-dum. No, she went to work for a silk stocking New York City law firm that made its bones defending corporate scum. And maybe, just maybe, this is why her presidential ambitions are falling a little bit flat. Maybe because it seems like everything she does is calculated for her benefit, and so everybody else does that too, I guess. But that she comes across as so utterly insincere. I guess I'm breaking my own rule because I'm sort of taking her apart a little bit. But I'm not really doing that in the context of her presidential campaign or as a presidential candidate, but as a person that I would not trust with the carcass of a runover skunk. And in particular, when Amanda Marcotte used that phrase, "What happened to Gillibrand?" I a lot of far worse things happen to people for far less, is all I'm saying. Steve in New York says, Schumer, I prefer the technical term piece of shit. Where that's concerned, I can't for the life of me figure out why nobody else in that Senate wants that job. Because while I desperately yearn, I ache for the Democrats to take the Senate in 2020, and not just take it, but take it convincingly. Like I've said before, dare to dream. Beat the Republican, at least try to beat the Republicans in every seat in which they are up for re-election while retaining the considerably fewer number that are up for re-election among the Democrats. One wonders how much value there will be in a Senate majority that has a Wall Street-fueled rib shiver, such as Schumer proved himself to be, as the majority leader. From Harry Reid to Chuck Schumer, as far as majority leaders are concerned who are Democrats, man, that's not a... It's not a 1-2 punch. Now, to be fair, Schumer's through, I think, a spokescreep, said that no, he did not tell him that he would have the entire... did not tell Franken he would have the entire caucus call for his resignation. He claims he didn't do that. But he did tell him that he needed to be out by 5 o'clock. One of the more telling aspects of Jane Mayer's piece is that in those waning days before he resigned, it was Al Franken's wife, whom, incidentally, he had met as a freshman at Harvard, and to whom he had been married for, lo, all these many years, and between whom there had never been so much as an iota or whiff of marital infidelity or scandal. It was Al Franken's wife who was saying, no, don't quit. You have to fight this. You have to stand up. You have got to push back against this. But when every, you know, I think this is referred to in the article. If you go to school one day and you think everybody's your friend, and every now and then you have to deal with a bully on the playground, that's one bully. But when you think everybody in school's your friend and you go to school one day and they're all bullies and they all beat the shit out of you, it kind of makes you not want to go back to school. So it's understandable, and in the final analysis, he has to, you know, he has to deal with the fact that he's the one who resigned. But it's not difficult at all to look at the scenario and understand why he did. Jane Mayer describes one instant in which, after resigning, Kirsten Gillibrand and the upstanding ladies, Christian Senate League and one Buddhist, ran over to hug him after he resigned. I commented on the time on it at the time. I said it was a filthy piece of political spectacle. It was, and it remains so. And the fact that Roger Stone had a hand in it, the fact that he was tipped when Franken's own office hadn't been even asked for comment or been given the common decency of admitting or denying the allegation. And a bunch of of slow-witted Democratic senators and even slower members of the multimillionaire for-profit media fell for it. Well, that's nothing short of disgusting. And by the way, the other thing that Jane Mayer does is she proves that Leanne Tweeden, who started the whole thing, is a liar. Plain and simple. She didn't misremember things. She told outright lies. Are you familiar with the play and the movie that was made of it called The Children's Hour? Well, this was a real-world children's hour. And all along through the various Senate hearings that we've had and watched questioning take place, a common refrain has been, because he was so good at it, man, wouldn't it have been nice to have Al Franken here? Yeah. I mean, he came very near to having Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III charged with perjury before Congress. It was Al Franken who drove Sessions to recuse himself, which of course infuriated Nitwit Nero. And it was Al Franken who ultimately was responsible for the appointment or for causing the necessity for the appointment of Robert Mueller. In thinking about all of that, if we ever do get justice with Donald Trump, I thought of the, as I read the piece today, I thought of the historic marker that I saw next to my hotel in Philly, in front of the oldest synagogue in Philadelphia. And I regret that I can't remember the man's last name right off the top of my head, but his first name was Chaim, H-A-Y-M. And he was a patriot. And I think I mentioned previously, he poured his entire fortune into financing the revolution. The young United States of America never paid him back a damn dime. And he died in abject poverty. I don't think Al Franken will die in abject poverty. But if, with the Mueller testimony, America finally figures out that this is a criminal president who desperately must be removed from the Congress or from the Oval Office, it will largely be because of early grunt work, time spent crafting brilliant lines of questioning attack by Al Franken. And for which he got for his trouble run out of the Senate by the people who were supposed to be his colleagues and allies. Just a gentle reminder of the truth of that old, old saying, I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. Ron in Raleigh writes, Chump Schumer. Schumer is a feckless piece of shit. How this worthless bastard rose to the leadership of the Democratic Party in the Senate, all he does is provide a rubber stamp to Dolt 45's judicial picks. The man is a doormat. After reading how the Trump administration is dismantling the administrative state, the USDA, BLM, HHS, EPA, just to name a few, are being dispersed across the country, which will, in point of fact, destroy these departments, I don't believe Chump will make any efforts to reconstruct the hollowed-out U.S. government. We're done. Stick a fork in us. I'm not all the way to where Ron in Raleigh is, but it's hard not to get awfully damned close. Because I don't see Chuck Schumer doing great things. Among other things, yeah, enough already. Amber alert for a gold Subaru in Fairmont, West Virginia. Among other things, I don't see Schumer shepherding great things, the great world-changing things that have to happen in order for us to remain a viable species on the planet through the Senate. No one who thinks that climate change is actually real would, as minority leader, allow Joe Manchin to become the ranking member of the Senate Natural Resources Committee. Uh-uh. No. But that's what he let happen. He sure didn't look at Bernie Sanders and say, hey, you need to ask for the ranking member position on natural resources. You say that the greatest existential threat humanity faces is climate change. You need to ask for that, Bernie, or get out of the Senate by 5 p.m. He didn't do that. Nope. He didn't tell Patty Murray, who was an early one jumping out there to demand Brankin's resignation. He didn't tell her that she was damned well going to stay right there in Senate Natural Resources as the ranking member in anticipation of the day when Democrats controlled the Senate again. Nope. Just let Joe climate change denying Manchin waltz right into the position, so that every single piece of green legislation that comes out of the House of Representatives, if and when the House is Democratic and the Senate is Democratic together, can go to the Senate Natural Resources Committee and die, die, die. It's a fact. So like I said, I'm not quite all the way to where Ron in Raleigh is, but I think I can see where he is from where I am. And thanks to two early contributors. We're at 235 to go in fundraising for the evening. 235, and I'm quite sincere when I say that we've got to knock these next 3 days down so that there will be a show on Thursday. Bill paying is a thing. Paid one big one over the weekend. Now I got this one. And then we can have fundraising free radio. Back a little bit before airtime, I had a couple of notes. Kyle from Kentucky Stan writes, even according to the right-wing shitrag of a publication, the Washington Examiner, the orange asshole who squats in our house, hasn't built even 1 mile of his stupid fucking wall. On a related note, how bad is it when I'm both laughing at and thankful for the sometimes mind-numbing incompetence of this fascist regime because they can't even build their promised big beautiful monument to racism and xenophobia, right? Right. And then there was this from Lady B. It has to do with the Black Jewel bankruptcy. Black Jewel, you might recall, if you've seen the story, is a coal company that was created under shady circumstances to buy up distressed mines in Appalachia and Wyoming and a little bit of Montana. The Powder River Basin out west. Well, Black Jewel did exactly as it was designed to do. It basically swallowed up the properties, drained as much money out of them as possible, and then declared bankruptcy. The Guardian story begins with the account of Missy Cole. She was notified by her bank her husband's most recent paycheck had bounced. That meant that they were $1,000 in the hole with the bank. He worked in eastern Kentucky for Black Jewel Mining. And as they put out paychecks to well over 1,000 workers, those paychecks, being coal companies, bounced. Gee, I wonder how they're going to make this about the Obama war on coal. Because I saw that. Nitwit Nero tweeted that the great state of West Virginia is doing great. It's coming back. It's growing by leaps and bounds. And, you know, the only thing growing here is the number of people that are ODing. The number of mountains being destroyed, the number of streams being buried and poisoned, and the number of people going to hospitals and funeral homes as a result of the poison that comes off of mountaintop removal sites. Lady B notes, 1,700 workers in Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Wyoming not only lost their jobs, their final paychecks bounced. You live there, meaning me. So you probably knew about this when it happened. I have nothing snarky or elitist to say. I think about the folks who should be in charge in those states, folks with the future of our planet in mind, folks who would steer jobs their way, ones that would allow them to build solar panels, wind turbine blades, or maybe even work to help locate hybrid and electric car plants there. Why doesn't Intel or Acer or Toshiba have plants there anyway? They make computer chips or build computers. If that's too environmentally hazardous, can they build furniture or make clothing? I went crazy there, I guess, says Lady B. I was thinking of locating most of our manufacturing jobs there. You know, shit we used to do before we outsourced it, because right now the only thing that not having the jobs there has done is made corporations richer by paying employees less while keeping more of the profits. A man and woman need to feel like their lives have purpose. And working is one of those ways. Not all of us are able or even want to sit behind a computer all day. Not all of us will be doctors, lawyers, or IT professionals. There are more things to running this world than white-collar work. Someone has to build the chairs judges sit on. Someone has to make the computer keyboards the IT workers type on. Someone makes the cars many of us drive. Why can't it be them? Along a similar vein, would it kill a large corporation like Amazon to pay their workers $15 an hour, fucking less than $30,000 a year? Financial status has always been a pissing contest, but if you're a billionaire running an almost trillion-dollar company, is it too much to ask to pay your employees enough money to actually be able to afford to live on, much less buy what you sell? How can you make and sell products to people with no concern as to where they're made, how they're made, and whether the people themselves can afford them? You know, even Henry Ford knew that, vicious old racist anti-Semite that he was. He said, I've got to build a car that my workers can afford to buy. It was over 100 years ago. Why is it okay to make baby formula that may poison kids, China specifically, but with a billion-person population, who gives a fuck, right? Why is it okay to have an American dig up, blow up, or otherwise poison entire swaths of their own backyards and then turn around and tell them not only that you can't pay them, but you won't even take care of their medical bills when they get sick, doing what you told them you'd take care of them to do? But for some reason, we allow folks who tell us we're stupid and treat us like shit to rule over us. This is what we do. Not all of us, but enough of us. Because by the sweat of thy brow shalt thou eat thy bread. If you are rich, you are smart, beautiful, and good in bed. If you're not, you deserve to suffer. 1,700 workers in Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Wyoming not only lost their jobs, their final paychecks fucking bounced. Insert any billionaire's name here, and they make more in a day than all these folks combined fucking made in their entire working lifetimes. Are they the stupid ones? Or are all of us Americans who keep allowing an unchecked capitalist system to go rampant equally complicit? The answer is yes. Thus saith Lady B. And yeah, I was familiar with the Black Jewel story. Because to be familiar with the Black Jewel story is to be familiar with every coal story. I think it was Vox had a story a week or so ago that I've still got in the stack. The headline was something like, "Coal ruined Appalachia, and now it's going to do the same thing to Wyoming." And poor old Wyoming, like poor old Appalachia, has nothing but a bunch of useless Republicans there to tell the victims of the coal industry. Coal's going to come back. It's coming back. Liz Cheney is one of the biggest purveyors of that bilge. Well, in Appalachia's case, it hasn't gone away. They're still blasting away because there's still something they perceive to be a market. It is down, but it is not over. Down, but not out. And on a one-to-one human basis, I have sympathy for the people who are getting fucked over by the coal industry, because all of West Virginia has been, all of Appalachia has been fucked over by the coal industry. But some people were okay with the fucking as long as they weren't the ones getting fucked, but in fact were the ones being paid to do the fucking. But now they have transitioned from fucker to fucky. And I'm sure they're desperately seeking a scapegoat. And that's why today I saw a West Virginia woman, or maybe it was yesterday, embarrassing the state again by saying the Obama war on coal almost killed us. Stupid, stupid, stupid little maggot. There was no Obama war on coal. There wasn't even an Obama skirmish on coal. There wasn't even an Obama threatening glance on coal. In the first 4 years of Barack Obama's term, more coal moved out of West Virginia than had ever moved in the state's entire history. And they did it with less people. Because that's the goal of the coal industry. If they could eventually figure out some way to make the coal mine itself and never have a single penny's labor cost, that would be the goal. As it is, they can pay a crew of maybe 10 people $60,000, $70,000 a year each to take down, in the course of 5 years, by as much as 1,000 feet, acres and acres and acres of carbon sink Appalachian forest. And in the process, they can poison the communities around them. So yeah, I did know about it. And by the way, they're getting infusions of capital, Black Jewel are, to cover debts and reclamation costs that they'd said they had money to pay for anyway. They're getting loans for that. But they're not getting loans so that the people's paychecks, the workers' paychecks, aren't debts. Those are just unsecured liabilities. The workers are in line behind equipment manufacturers interest payments and corporate executive retention bonuses. So they can, you know, the workers, as far as the coal companies are concerned, can fuck right the fuckity fuck off. Not a damn thing they can do about it. Oh, if they had any political savvy, maybe they'd realize that they'd been had by a bunch of Republicans who care more about the coal companies than they do the workers in the coal companies. Maybe they'd realize that having a deadbeat tax cheat coal baron as governor of the state of West Virginia isn't the best idea in the world. Maybe. Well, thank you, Todd. Mighty nice thing to say. Todd says, I hope you called the fire department. Between you and Lady B, your entire broadcasting and commentary apparatus is burning up. Well, it's only because the world's so fucking hot. Even at 76 degrees in the fabulous Horn Studio. Silent R. Lamar with a note. Deadly baby food from China because China does not feed their people baby food for America. Oh, no kidding. Continuing, Silent R. Lamar says, oh, Bob. Ron, call, yeah. There you go again, trying to fix stupid. Stop it, Bob. Which is interesting because right before that, I got a note from Lee in New York saying, stop it, Bob. Stop complaining about my senators. That's my job. Senator Gillibrand pushed us to get Franken out of the Senate. Senator Schumer doesn't even speak out of House bills dying when arriving at the Senate. I remember McConnell demanding up or down votes. I did not realize he meant only Republican issues. Chuck, your silence is deafening. It's enough to turn my state red. And that right there is a terrifying thought. So, you know, for everybody says, well, why do you West Virginians keep electing Joe Manchin? Us hillbillies can say, why do you New Yorkers keep electing Chuck Schumer? Is there nobody better? Is there nobody better than Kirsten Gillibrand? I mean, I give credit when credit's due. She was good on Trump's nominees. I don't think she voted in favor of a single Trump cabinet nominee or judge. good for her. I give praise when praise is warranted. But I don't trust her. Now, I don't trust somebody who, in order to get a check from the NRA, will brag about keeping loaded rifles under the bed in a house with little children. I don't trust that person. Even if it turned out to be a lie, that's still, you know, a lie. And if it was the truth, it's even more horrifying. Because these political leaders provide models. That others follow. And then you wake up one morning and a little boy has taken his single-shot 22 caliber pink camo cricket rifle and shot his toddler baby sister. That could easily have, if she's telling the truth, that could easily have happened in the Gillibrand household. Hey, thanks, Silent R. Lamar. Big, huge thanks. We're done with fundraising for the evening. That's profound and that's tremendous. I'll go ahead and say if we knock out Tuesday and Wednesday, which is $400, if we can do that, then lo and behold, if we knock it out tonight, that's 7 days of no fundraising broadcasting. Knock it out tomorrow at 6. Knock it out Wednesday at 5. So thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Thank you a ton. Note coming in from Elberton, Rhode Island. Bob, the Bureau of Land Management manages federal government-owned land. A majority of it's in the western part of the country. The Office of Land Management is being moved out west, closer to the land it manages, so not all the office moves don't make sense. Oh, but I think if you look at it, very closely, you'll find that they want to move it to where it can be messed with by Bundyite Republicans, people like Mike Lee of Utah, or you know Liz Cheney, Wyoming. It's not a good idea. It really, really isn't. And it was not done with that kind of purity of purpose in mind. Okay, cowbell. Kyle says, more coal was moved out of West Virginia in Obama's first 4 years than ever before. God damn it, Bob. Why you got to go and ruin the maggots narrative that the damn Kenyan Muslim is to blame for every little bad thing that ever happened in their lives? Oh, well, I don't think I'm going to change that, Kyle. Every time their goddamn post toasties go soggy in the milk, it's that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, Obama war on post toasties in Apple. You get the idea. And Lady B says, thanks, Bob, but isn't the guy in charge of Black Diamond also planning on building a $30 million hotel in West Virginia, too? Something like that. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Whether it comes to fruition or not, I don't know, because I have yet to figure out why that particular neck of the woods it needs that kind of a facility, and frankly, what its utility will be. Well, at least you know this much. The people working there won't be paid as much as coal miners. Shit, they'll be lucky to get minimum wage. You know, they may have to work for tips. P.S. to Todd, says Lady B., we don't need no water, darling. Let the motherfucker burn. Yeah. Whew. What's that? Todd says, I have a very short moron story. Ugh. Well, I'm presuming that means Todd might be calling in. And before he does, I have a moron story. Because every now and then I catch one of those clips from, you know, I'm not working Steve and Todd's side of the street. No, I'm not. But this one you'll chomp right through the hockey puck. They're taking calls on Washington Journal. The maggots are all in a frenzy about the squad. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they are.
Republican caller, hi there.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning to all of you. My concern is the what now, listening to the reporters, that there's a lot of the facts that are being walked around. For example, regarding the Russia Mueller thingy, it is a proven fact that there was false evidence.
Wait, the Russia Mueller thingy? It's the hold the hell on. I haven't been perusing the seamier side of the internet lately. It's Russia Mueller, not Trump Russia anymore. Of which there is real evidence that, oh, never mind, that we're talking about a maggot here. It's Russia Mueller, and there was evidence that was false evidence brought by Obama and Clinton, yada, 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 okay.
By the Obama and Clinton and all the rest of them, DNC chills. Those are facts. That's not an opinion.
No,
But my biggest concern is right now is that the four, whatever they're called, the group, you know, those people,
those four, whatever they're called, the group. Yeah, yeah, Laura, that's what they're called. They're called the group. Those four. Well, here it comes. Oh, by the way, contrary to whatever she's hearing on Fox, because apparently as soon as the meds kick in, this woman goes from Washington Journal over to Fox. Fact of the matter is, and everybody except Fox has more or less reported this, the allegations in the Steele dossier are borne out a little bit more each day. One thing is noted as, yep, that was truthful. Oh, there's another one. Wait, the only thing we haven't done is seen the PP tape yet. And may not be a PP tape. Maybe a pedophile tape. You know, from over there at Pedophile Island. Right? Lee, meanwhile, says, by the way, regarding Republican spin and Obama and coal, the evil Kenyan stole West Virginian coal before Republicans were discovered that the theft occurred. What else did this Muslim hide under his hijab? You know, you could I could take you to any number of watering holes in West Virginia, and you could say that, and they wouldn't. They'd buy you a beer. Nod knowingly. Yep. Probably done that too.
Subscribe to an ideology that has 27 million black African slaves owned by them in their country.
So you say there's a race of men in the trees. You're for tough legislation. Thanks for calling. I wait all night for calls like these. Sorry, every time I hear one of these people, I immediately think of that line from Donald Fagen's The Night Fly. And then I sing on the radio, which is probably not a great idea. Yeah. The group, or whatever they're called, ascribe to an ideology that has 27 million black African slaves owned by them in their country. Now, if we... If we make certain leaps of postulation that in their country means the United States of America, because, well, even at its broadest, Rashida Tlaib is Palestinian, Ayanna Pressley is just Merkin, and I mean, AOC is American, so their country, plural, pronoun trouble, their country means the United States of America. Ilhan Omar is an American citizen. The only thing she can't be is president of the United States, but her American-born kids can be. This maggot lady says that there are 27 million enslaved black Africans, which Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, AOC, and Ilhan Omar own. And just in case there's a chance that that we've somehow misunderstood this, she makes herself even clearer.
You know, those people, they ascribe to an ideology that has 27 million black African slaves owned by them in their country, Muslim countries. And that's currently, that's not 150 years ago, that's not then. But that's now. I mean, where are the Democrats leading us to? You know, I have to ask that question.
I have to interject. If we're going to talk about facts, let's not accuse these four congresspeople of owning 27 million slaves. They don't. They're American citizens. One of the congresspeople was born in Somalia. But they don't own slaves, and they've never advocated owning slaves. I don't think we want to go down those kind of roads.
This is one of the things that's happening. Republicans have very consciously made a decision to focus in on the four members of the squad. Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, and who am I missing?
Ayanna Pressley.
Yeah, and Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts. As the face of the Democratic Party.
Ilhan Omar, did you?
Of Ilhan Omar, yeah. And trying to focus in on the fact that they are socialists. They're also people of color, and instead of focusing on policy, we have started to veer into questions of race and identity that are very personal and in some places risk taking us down a road of violence.
Robert is calling from Portsmouth, Virginia. Good morning.
Yeah, we're not going to fool around with them. No, we've had enough. My little pumpkin hate hurts. In a former era, we would say, "Well, she got into the lady who called. She got into the acid a little early this morning." But this isn't an outlier. This isn't just one more. We got a Lulu today among all the normal people. They should retitle Washington Journal Maggots on Parade. Because either Steve from Georgistan or Todd can tell you, this is every fucking day. And, you know, here, the call, we don't screen calls here either. You know, you call in, there's basically three different methods. And whoever calls in first goes on first, whoever calls in second goes on second. And there's nobody picking up and saying, "And what is it you want to talk about?" But one thing that sets us apart from, say, Washington Journal is the fact that we have a no maggots policy, which before Trump was a no Republicans policy. Because we have reached the conclusion, and this is based upon empirically gathered data over the course of over a decade, that Republicans have nothing of value to add to the conversation. Because every time they get on the air, you get this. And nothing but that. There is no argument that is made by a Republican that cannot be swiftly and mercilessly countered as the bilge water that it is. And so does C-SPAN think that Washington, I mean, I guess it has a certain entertainment value, but do they actually think that they're providing something resembling a public service? Because giving a platform to dead-enders, hard cases, and just plain nuts does not advance the social discourse, the civic discourse, the civic intellect, the body politic, nothing. Bupkis. Good point. Leah, New York, asking. Subject line, go back. Why didn't the Drumpfs not make Germany great? Or why didn't Mary McLeod go back and make that wee, forlorn little puddle of a gene pool island she came from great? Elward asking, Bob, isn't AOC possibly a Catholic? Yeah, I'd say decent chance. And, of course, there's oodles of that kind of bias still out there. Remember, the people at the if you ask maggots a polling question and you ask them, should the United States increase Christian immigration to this country, they will, with a resounding voice, cry, amen. When you say, well, most of the people at the border are Christian, they respond, no, they're Catholics. So that's just how the maggot mind operates. Oh, by the way, going back to what Lady B said about Amazon paying $15 an hour, Sparky, serving as the ad hoc research department for this, said Amazon raised wages in April. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos challenged rival retailers to increase their minimum wages to $16 an hour in his annual letter to shareholders released on Thursday. Amazon in November had raised its own minimum wage to $15 per hour in response to the ongoing criticism around pay disparity and poor working conditions. Thanks, Sparky. I appreciate that. Silent R. Lamar says, Bob, I beg to differ. Talking to Republicans, there are some Republicans we can talk to. The problem is they're all dead. But I'm not even so sure about that. Maybe a little bit, okay? Maybe the liberal Northern Republicans who jumped on board with things like the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, okay, yeah. But remember, those are still the same Republicans that said everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick was going to lead us down the path to Soviet-style communism. And they only said that because money. They never believed a word of it. I've got a great example of that too. From the mouth of none other than the oxymoron, Flush Flimball. He confessed on the radio last week. He confessed that he was lying to his little ditto heads through the entire Obama presidency. So a caller calls in and says, "Mega dittos from Busted Knuckle Rush. Republicans can nominate a young, potentially two-term president, one that believes in fiscal conservatism. We're going to have in 2019, there's going to be a $1 trillion deficit. Trump doesn't really care about that. He's not really a fiscal conservative." I always loved that when they played that card with Bush, too. "Well, fiscal conservatism works. It's just that, like, Bush wasn't really a conservative." I wish I was kidding. They did that. So, but the thing is, when this ditto head said this to Flush, Flush responded, "My friend, deficits do not matter. We've learned that. We've found that out." And then essentially admitted that he was running a scam on his soft-skulled audience for 8 long years, shrieking about how Barack Obama, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, was going to kill this country with all them damn deficits. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, speaking of a $15 minimum wage, Bernie's campaign staff has begun to call for payment of a $15 minimum wage. This past Thursday in the Washington Post, unionized campaign organizers working for Senator Bernie Sanders' presidential effort are battling with its management, arguing that the compensation and treatment they're receiving does not meet the standards Sanders espouses in his rhetoric. These were internal communications that were provided to the Post. Campaign field hires have demanded an annual salary they say would be equivalent to a $15 an hour wage, which Sanders for years has said should be the federal minimum. The organizers and other employees supporting them have invoked the senator's words and principles in making their case to campaign manager Faiz Shakir, according to the documents reviewed by the Washington Post. So, but anyway, Flimball responding said, "Nobody's a fiscal conservative anymore. All this talk about concern for the deficit in the budget has been bogus for as long as it's been around." That's a hell of a note coming from somebody who in 2011 said that Obama is the architect of deficits and debt unheard of in this nation. Yeah. The teabaggers arose over the deficit. And we got those hellish, useless nightmare Congresses out of that. How many years have people tried to scare everybody about the deficit? The years, how many decades of politicians tried to scare us about the deficit, the national debt, the deficit, any number of things. And yet, here we're still here, and the great jaws of the deficit have not bitten off our heads and chewed them up and spit them out. Now, hand me another handful of those Oxycontins. I chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor, my friends. If nothing else, you gotta, I guess, give them style points for brass. And by the way, the White House is getting really nervous about the Mueller testimony. That's 2 days from now, Wednesday. They have asserted bullshit presidential privilege over anything that's not within the four corners of the 448-page report, the Mueller report. The Bill Barr to prosecution says that everything that's that he depended on or relied upon in reaching in writing the report is presumptively privileged, and that the people of the United States are not entitled to know about it. Ron in Raleigh says, what the blazing fuck? Going back to the crazy lady on Washington Journal. Even if that crazy shit was true, this woman wouldn't have given a damn about the 27 million Negro slaves. Right. But this is the world we live in. And just as a for instance, there's a clip out there. Not going to fool with it unless you want to hear it. There's a clip out there of a guy on Fox getting his ass handed to him for making a love it or leave it argument, when that is literally the advertising slogan that was put up all around this country in towns that had Klan billboards. Join the Klan, America, love it or leave it. Help the Klan fight communism. You won't have to look very far to find that image. By the way, in an effort to keep knocking things down, I had a wonderful offer from Ralph's. If somebody will kick in $25, she'll kick in $25. So she'll double your $25 if we keep the ball rolling and get down underneath $400 to finish off July and get that one big-ass bill paid. When I think about what we pay for internet here and what we get in return, Jesus Christ. I mean, literally, fiber is not a quarter mile down there. I can walk to where the fiber passes, goes by our road. I can walk there in 3 minutes. Yeah. And I get 10 down and 1 up. But anyway, that's what's awaiting. So thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly. This is how the community keeps everything together, and we're trying to provide a little bit of relief to donor fatigue. Because donor fatigue is probably the biggest single threat to the ongoing possibility of what we do here. Let's go over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd. Todd? Wait a minute. Stand by. There you are. There you are.
Am I here?
You're there.
Bob, I'm not going to talk over you. I'm not going to do any voices. I will say that Frontier does not appreciate your comments. So...
They never do.
And I don't even know what to say about that. All right, so you had to bring up C-SPAN, and that's not what I call it. But look, I understand you don't like I'm assuming you do not like Washington Journal because it makes the ignorant feel validated. That's what I'm gathering.
That's well expressed. Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to get that cleared up. All right. And I agree. I like it, but I agree on that observation because it's true to me. It's true to you, obviously. But I think that's what maybe people need to know. That way you know what you're dealing with. You know,
it's the same reason we have zoos. You know, You know, there's not, you know, you don't have tigers in your backyard, but it might be nice to see what one looks like in case one ever comes wandering up and tries to eat you.
Don't try to anthropomorphize. Oh, my God. That was funny, man. I'm surprised you didn't ring the bell. That was good.
Well, if you're awarding one, I will.
Listen, Bitcoin, I've been telling the Look, that Bitcoin is going to buy you a whole new outdoor furniture. You know, like the sofas, these outdoor sofas things that can rain on. Anyway, that's down the road. Oh, man. Your show is so, it's top heavy today. It's like when you buy a steak and there's no fat in it. It's just all meat, like a filet.
Mm.
You have to cook. You got to really.
You got
to
be careful.
You got to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You got to be careful.
Or you can half sole a shoe with it in a minute.
In a minute. And that's why people have to cheat in Butterfly, because it's tough. You know, it's hard to get it done right. It's so much content in what I've heard so far. I don't know about anyone else. All right. So, oh, my God, my voice is shot, man. I was talking to my neighbors, and they're having a baby, and there's all kinds of stuff going on over there. But, okay, the Moran story. So I'm in between here and the capital city. I'm on my way home, and I had to stop to get grits because I'm out of the good grits.
Yeah.
And I promised someone else some good grits.
I think we had that conversation, yes.
Correct, exactly. And the place that you call Food Town, who they used to carry the grits, they no longer have, they've redone their stores. They don't have them now.
Oh, by the way, I found I remembered another good grit brand.
What?
House Autry.
Oh, yeah. 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 Their breading is great. That's the best breading I've ever used. Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, their breading is fantastic, but their grits are real damn good, too.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, their hush puppies. I have House Autry in my cabinet right now. I absolutely do.
I knew you'd know the brand.
Yeah, they're available at the Wiggling Pig here. You know, you have to go. I don't understand the pricing scheme of these places because, like, for instance, I had to get the grits at the IGA, and I'll say their name because whatever. Every little town has an IGA, and all the ones right here are pretty much nasty. They don't spend enough money to have the places cleaned properly, but, you know, you have to go there for certain things. There, and I didn't even mean to talk about this, but I was shocked they had to start buying seasonings because, you know, I make my rubs from scratch. So their Tony's is $1. $1.
Whoa.
The Dollar Tree doesn't even carry Tony's anymore. And then Fred's used to have it, but our Fred's closed, and it was like $1.85 or $2-something. So in other words, it's less than half the price of everyone else. I don't understand it. But a lot of their products are just way overpriced.
See, I'm lucky in that regard. You know, you can go broke just buying spices, but I've got
damn right you can.
Over in Fayetteville, though, we got a Ben Franklin. You know, the old so-called dime store. It's still got hardwood floors that creak under your feet, and they carry a bunch of Amish canned goods. And they carry spices that they buy in bulk, and then they just package out and label and put on the shelf.
Ooh.
And, you know, it's a third of the grocery store prices.
Holy cow.
You know, for everything. I'm talking about cardamom, allspice, cinnamon, cayenne, white pepper, pink peppercorns, three different kinds of chili powder, oregano, basil, you know. You name it.
That's a big deal, man.
And for me, when I'm doing things like brining pork loins and ribs and butts and such, that's a great barbecue joint name, Butts and Such. of course, you know, Bob's Big Butts. I think, you know, that's what I want to open, but I can get three times as much. Mixed pickling spice, and you know what I'm talking about.
I can get
three times as much of that at Ben Franklin as I can get in a little bottle at Kroger's or Walmart or wherever else.
That's what I don't get. it's getting irritating. That's why, like, people who don't cook don't understand this. Like, why would I pay a dollar for 2 to 3 or maybe 2 ounce, a little tiny thing of garlic powder, you know, for $4 when if you got to be in the right neighborhood at the right time because, you know, you don't want to burn up a lot of gas. And it used to be at the Dollar Tree, they would have a nice, not a restaurant size, but, you know, not institutional, but a moderate, you know, a big jar. But they've cut back on that now also, you know, because I like to, and probably you do it too, because we cook the poultry seasoning with that, where the first ingredient is not salt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Right. Yeah, that's great. So, but what you, the story about Ben Franklin, I've been to Ben Franklin's in Venango, all over in Venango County, Pennsylvania. It's up in the hinterlands. Yeah, so that's wonderful, man. That's something good has to happen, right?
Yeah, and the Amish brand that they carry is called Amish Wedding, and they do a sweet, fiery hot cherry salsa.
No way, really?
Yeah, I've never had anything better. I mean, it, you're sitting there sweating and burning, and you just can't stop.
The sweet and hot at the same time.
Yeah. And it's tomatoes and cherry, too, which you don't really think of. But, yeah, it really, really does work.
Well, there are a lot of things that don't necessarily sound right, but actually are right together. Like that stuffed pork loin I made yesterday. Oh, yeah, yesterday or day before. I don't know, all these days running together. Wow, man, I had to mix cheeses in there and... I don't want to waste time. It's not waste time, but I don't want to spend. Other people want to talk to you, but I have to tell you about that pork loin. Man, I'm getting better at this. That's going to be on my mobile food distribution network. I'm serious. I'm going to have the whole loin. Like when they want it, I'll give up samples, and they can buy the whole thing. And it ain't going to be cheap.
But oh no!
They can get it home. You know what I'm saying? Because it takes time, effort. You know they're going to spend. I'm not going to say the amount, but it's going to be less than $50. But it will be, you know, and not $49, not $39.95 or anything like that. But it's not going to be cheap. But you're going to, man, I'm telling you, last night, that's the best one I've ever done. Oh, my God.
No, it's great when a good pork loin comes together because it's so easy to screw them up. You can dry them out too fast. Yeah, I wanted to throw out, I don't like going to Walmart, but it's unavoidable here. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And over in the condiments aisle,
mm-hmm.
under the Sam's Choice label, dill mustard. Mm-hmm. Dill mustard.
Oh, boy.
Now, you want to talk about on a piece of pork. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And man.
And to use that as the basis for a mustard-based Carolina-style barbecue sauce, it really does work.
Right. That's that Maurice Bessinger stuff. You know, see, there's so much you can do, man. Yeah, I'm serious. You've changed my whole palate for the pork loin with your idea because it just, there's so many, like I said before, there's so many permutations and combinations. And everyone loves it. And look, the presentation's wonderful. It's just, I'm like getting creative. That's kind of, you know.
Yeah, my favorite herb combination, now I'm not talking spices, but herbs, and I'm not talking about weed.
Right.
But just in combination, I don't know why they work so well together, but fresh dill and fresh tarragon just create a perfume that just runs all over like a chicken, pork. Yeah.
That sounds delicious. Once you start making these rubs and you get into it, that's why, like, people who are really into it, I only start, most people, you know, if you know what you're doing, you only start with maybe one ingredient or none that has salt in it because you want the flavor without the salt. The salt's going to be there anyway, you know. And I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm just stating the obvious, but I don't know. Maybe I'm not, I don't know. Am I being silly here?
No.
Okay, because the salt makes the meat tough, and that way you have more control over where you're cooking. So this is a good segue into the IGA because I could not.
Okay, yeah, because there's a moron hiding back there somewhere, right?
There's a moron, and I need a reference point here because I'm going to ask the community for some feedback because it's really like in public, I don't get upset, but this is just like, man, I felt, this was like, stop it, just stop. Okay, so I acquire the grits, and they're in the paper sack. And then when I get to the register, you know, I shake them to make sure they're not leaking.
Yeah.
And, of course, one was. And I was like, oh, no, I can't have that. So I said to the cashier, I said, you know, I'm going to have to replace this. So you might want to put this to the side because there's a hole in it. It's leaking. And she puts it right down on the belt, scans it, puts it right next to the products I'm buying. I said, I thought I just asked you not to put it next to my things. And, you know, you shouldn't put that back on the shelf probably. It has a hole in it. Now, this woman is only, I don't think she's past 20, you know.
Okay.
And I have stocked for a couple of months when I was in school, you know, to make some extra money because it was the middle of the night, you know, it was right across from the dormitories or whatever. And that was right when people started scanning. And I said, you know, that takes inventory, too. There's a reason, like I'm not buying that. Why did you scan it? But... So I go back and get it, and I said, well, you know, why did you scan it? She said, well, I didn't want to wait. You know, maybe I'm not presenting this in the right way.
No, I got it. No. Now, theoretically, theoretically, she could have scanned it, sold it to you, and then you get done, you go to customer service, you explain, this one's got a hole in it, I'm going to leave it with you, I'm going to go get another bag. And so the line, keeps moving. It doesn't sound to
me
like she had the real. Doesn't sound like she had the real mental fortitude going on for that whole process to have run through her head.
None of that. And let me add another layer. This is in like, you know, Nowhereville. Okay, we're in the sticks, and there was no one behind me because you know I don't like to do stuff like that. With someone behind me, I'll just handle it at customer service. No one was behind me. So I'm thinking, he had to wait for what? I have to come back anyway. So there's all kinds of things going through my mind. But, of course, this is a young, blonde-haired white girl. And the way she looked at me, and I'm telling you, there's something going on. This Trumpeteering is infecting a younger generation. And that's the point of my moron story. And what I'm saying is that, and I heard people talk about this on Morning Joe this morning at that rally when they, you know, were talking about children gathering into this chant. You know, they knew it was wrong, and they looked around. It's like, well, everybody else is doing this. Maybe I should do it too. You know, that's what happened when around, let's say, the late teens, early 20s, when lynching was at its height. And our vice president, you know, he's from that state, Indiana. That was the home of the Klan at that point. So this shit is out of order now. You know, and it's only because I didn't have my uniform on. You know what I was wearing today? I have a Bob Marley T-shirt on, and this is a good, this is an expensive shirt, man. I don't wear this shirt all the time.
This is the good, yeah, this is your Sunday go to meeting Bob Marley T-shirt.
You know what I mean? Exactly. It's my drum circle T-shirt. It's got no
wait a minute. Yeah.
You get it. His head is larger than life, just the whole front and the back. I remember when I bought this shirt, I looked at this shirt for 4 or 5 months from a vendor at Broad and Erie at the subway stop that was closest to me before I the next transition to get home. And finally, he was like, look, man, you have to have this shirt. You keep looking at it every day. Here, you keep looking at this shirt. I'm like, you know, because I'm not going to get into it now, but you know, it's a special meaning for me because that was when I was getting myself together and I had to, you know, anything. It helped me get myself together. But this is not, you don't see this shirt everywhere. That's why I don't wear it all the time. This is like heavyweight. This is a real, you know, it's like, why do I have to wear a shirt and tie? I have gray fucking hair. What the hell does this young lady know? I shouldn't have to get into it like, well, you know, I've been a stalker and there's a reason. People keep inventory. Please do not sell this product. There'll be mealyworms in there. It has a hole in it. You know,
them shitty little moths that'll fly up out of it, sure.
You know, I'm trying to help you, but I shouldn't have to say all of that. And in other words, it just boils down to disrespect. And this shit is fucked up. And let's juxtaposition this to earlier this weekend when I happened to see a local entrepreneur, and he has three high-end restaurants in the state. And we often go to his establishment when we have company in town because he just does it right. You know, fresh, everything's fresh. It's not a chain. You know, he does it right. He's from Chicago. He's not from here. And I noticed that people who are not infected by this pathogen, and you know what I mean, they go out of their way to be nicer now. And this young lady, man, she just, the way she looked at me, I was like, you know what, I could almost hear, I could feel her say, I just called my daddy and he coming over here to talk to you. I'm like, you know what, bring that motherfucker on, because the way I feel right now, my fist will go through his head and the next two motherfuckers' heads. You know, and I hate to feel like that, but this is a new generation of people that are being infected by this goddamn pathogen. And it's fucked up. And I'm calling out to the black folks out here. Do you see this also? Because we've come too far. And I'm going to tell you right now, I ain't taking no shorts. I am not taking no shorts.
No. No. And some of it, I suspect, Todd, is geographic. Now, that's another way of, without doing it overtly, saying South Carolina. But it could also mean North Carolina. It could also mean Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Kentucky, West Virginia, Missouri, et cetera. It cannot be said definitively to be that. But I think doesn't it bear out statistically? Asks the guy who knows nothing about statistics. Doesn't it bear out statistically that the higher concentration of maggots, the greater the likelihood that the disease will metastasize into the young?
Yeah, it does. Exactly.
Let's go back to the zoo for a minute. When little monkeys see grown-up monkeys throwing poo, little monkeys will pick up a hunk and give it a fling, too.
One or two to rhyming one.
Every now and then.
Absolutely. That's another cowbell. That's more Bitcoin.
That Bitcoin, it's going to be something someday.
It's coming. But yeah, and see, this is dangerous. This is dangerous stuff. Right, because, I mean, mammals, you know, we learn from modeling. And this is a problem now. These people are emboldened. And she's too young for that. You know, she doesn't know who I was. You know what? I said, you know, I'm from the home office. But that was before she. No, because you don't know who you're talking to, man. People dress casually.
But let me give you a little bit of, I mean, the bonhomie, and you know, arm around the shoulder, you know, in a totally non-homoerotic way. I went through a similar thing this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was in Philly, I stayed in a hotel, of course. And I'm a member of that hotel chain's rewards program.
Oh, I better know where you stayed now. Okay. You were right in Chinatown, weren't you?
No. I was in historic Philly. I was on Arch and 4th.
Oh, okay. Maybe they have a new one there.
It's an older place.
Does it start with a C?
No. It was a Wyndham.
Oh, okay, cool. Well,
but Wyndham is Wyndham and La Quinta and Days Inn and Motel 6 and Travel Lodge and I think Super 8. I was thinking Jason Isbell singing I Don't Want to Die in a Super 8 Motel. So I stayed there for 4 days, and it should have resulted in a pretty hefty points award.
I would think so. Sure. Why not?
So I called him and I said, you know, I gave my member number when I checked in. I'm not seeing any points. When I called, they said it would take 5 days. We're on day 7. Where's the points?
Right.
And she says, well, you booked through a third-party website.
No.
And I said, so what? It's nothing. There's nothing on my app. When I open the app on my phone, it doesn't say you booked through a third-party website. you don't get points. Well, that's our policy. I said, so your policy is you don't ever want me to be a customer of yours again.
I'm telling you, that did you demand satisfaction?
Oh, I did. I did. And I got passed up the line to a supervisor who also said no.
Damn. I don't like this story.
No, I'm as Tracy would say, hotter than fish grease about it.
Okay. So this is fresh. So it's still evolving then, right?
Yeah, I have not given up. But I
Listen,
must I, but
man,
I'm
you stayed at that motherfucking hotel. What more is there to
Yeah, and not only did I stay at the hotel, I had, you know, it's a pity this isn't video. This is one of those occasions. I could show you my roommate. I didn't know I had it. I didn't know I had a roommate. But he had about a billion legs. And lots of but lots of creepy spiny hair and long alien from another planet antennae. And he lived in my bathroom,
mm-hmm.
along with the water bugs in the bathtub.
Well, you can get on Yelp and destroy him if you feel like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't have said that, but...
Well, no, I mean, when I brought it up to them, they knocked off $8.25 a day for me having to share the room with those bugs.
I'm not feeling good about this story. I mean, because the bottom line, and
the bottom line was I experienced the same thing you experienced, namely, don't give a fuck.
You know what? Let me ask you this: we're of a certain age, where you know people had computers because when you get a flight, you know, we were kids in the 70s, they had computer terminals, but they were primitive, and you know they weren't like what we have now. But it seems to me, and I mean, I have to do a lot of business because I have to do stuff for other people, the older folks, you know what I mean? And there's way too many errors. People didn't make these types of errors when I was growing up, even when I started, you know, when I was a young adult. I mean, this is my experience and my observation, and this is why I'm bringing it up. And I noticed that, before you respond, I noticed that a lot of times I've gotten in the habit of having to call two or three times because it depends on who you talk to. You know, there's a lot of turnover in these places. They get trained. People get trained. They're only making $10 an hour. They move on to a different job. They don't care. And maybe it depends on who you talk to. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, some of it's just luck of the roll. But underneath this, you got to remember is that management style. I'll never forget how our buddy Bruce referred to MBA as standing for more bigger assholes. And he would constantly castigate the Harvard School of Business for propagating this management philosophy that says, fuck all y'all. We're getting what we can get, and, you know, good luck to the rest of you. You know,
what? Exactly. Will,
Bishop Willard Romney and Bain Capital, that sort of folks.
That's where we are. Now here's a case in point. Now the backup around here, we had some kind of backup battery for the router and, you know, everything, you know, out of all this nonsense. This is the backup battery for everything. So that apparently it had been next door, it had been beeping, and the person over next door cut it off, muted it. But they've been doing that for some time, and it looks like it was made in 1992. You know, it's boxy and ugly, and they don't even service it anymore after a call to AT&T. So they sent, they were supposed to send two new remotes because we complained about that, and a new router that has a backup battery built in. Then today, we get another router. So, their shit is just fucking out of order. Because I have AT&T also for a different device. And they consistently they've gotten sued. They've paid fines. They always pad the bill. Like Wells Fargo. They're crooks. You know, they keep doing it until you catch me. And they go, oh, I'm sorry. You know, no. If I don't pay my bill, you cut this shit off. You know, I told you, don't charge me for this. Don't just stop it. Just stop. But then once again, it depends on who you talk to. Like, for instance, I got the best advice about clearing up space on an iPhone only because I talked to this one guy. I'll never forget it. And I'm not going to say it on the radio because I don't want them to fix it. But there is a workaround where you can clear out all that free space on your phone without even uploading it or anything. And no one, I mean, it's like I've never heard it again. People don't know shit, man. They hire these people that give them shitty training. And you know, they expect us to pay top dollar, just like you with your hotel. You have receipts. You stayed there. What's the problem? And matter of fact, you're an attorney, but it would seem like if they're going to do that, common sense would say they should have an asterisk at the bottom of the placard or the contract that this does not, you will not get points if booked through a third party.
Yeah, your mileage may vary.
Because everybody goes, who doesn't go through a motherfucking third party?
Well, she said, well, you know, it's on our terms and conditions.
Who reads that shit?
Right. And see, there is a doctrine out there. There's a legal doctrine out there in some states called the right of reasonable expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I don't have a reasonable expectation that they're going to give me a pony, but if they say earn points for free stays the minute the app opens, I have a reasonable expectation that I'm going to get points when I stay with them.
It's quite simple. You laid your head on that pillow in that hotel. It's just quite. That's what I'm saying. It never used to be a problem. I don't understand this shit. We're devolving. We are devolving. I know people need jobs, but damn. At some point, these businesses need to understand they wouldn't be anywhere without us. You know, they just cheat. And it starts at the top. Once again, we have all this nefariousness that begins with the executive office and to the children. And it was quite predictable. You will hear children now say, well, the president did it or said it, so I can do it. Look at that beaner or look at that ginger. See, I didn't say it. You know? And wait, you know what I'm concerned about? I'm very concerned about this, is that when this fake-ass stock market, that's what's fake news, because this is just the wealthy. Remember, Trump serves two groups of people. He serves the unwashed proletariat masses who are racist, and they love him. Doesn't matter what he says, they love him. And meanwhile, while they're cheering everything, everybody has forgotten that there's a permanent tax cut for the industrialists and the capitalists that's going to take a hell of a lot to repeal that. You know,
which is why Rush Limbaugh said, my friend's deficits are bogus.
See, that's that hocus pocus shit. That's why they're not saying anything. This whole thing was a setup. Well, I just all I can say is if it weren't for this pork loin, man, I don't know what I'd do.
I got to know is, did you get your other bag of grits?
I did. Yeah, I went back. And she was slamming stuff around. I mean, I irritated this young lady, you know. And
horrible person.
Right. And it's because I'm damn black and I had a bottom only T-shirt on, you know. And I sent my picture out today. I was looking so quite nice. My better half, she was like, ooh. You know, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying. I was looking quite good today.
Yeah.
But why the fuck do I have to wear? It's goddamn unhealthily hot. Why do I have to wear a fucking shirt and tie to get any respect? And that goes back to how I started. Wanted to start this. So I want to know. I wanted some feedback via email, text, call in from some black folk who listen to your show, because if we have young people being indoctrinated, and this reminds me of that fucking incident about maybe 5 years ago or less, where some Mississippi Teaks, TKE fraternity brothers were on the bus, and they were like, no, niggers not, they're never in our fraternity, basically.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, only people of means, mostly, you know, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be, you're going to have some type of executive or some type of power if you join the frat, because that means you're not going to have a side job, most likely. Or if you do, it's going to be cushy because you have to pay dues and there's other stuff you have to do and keep your grades up. So that automatically starts the sifting out process. You know, if I'm getting too in the weeds or anything.
No, I get it. I mean, I was a member of a fraternity, but it was very much of a blue-collar fraternity. Because most of us did have jobs. And a lot of us were in there because the pricing was competitive with the dorms and cheaper than an apartment.
Exactly. We're in the same cohort. Right. And what happened, see, our cohort, this was, you know, I was talking with my mom the other day and some other folks. When we were in school, you know, you might have a one part-time job or maybe two. Wasn't really stressful. You were able to, because I went to boarding school. I was done with dorms. I never lived on campus. Only once, because I was done with the dorms. But you could do that, pay rent, maintain a household. Didn't even know anything about assistance. Nobody was hungry. I didn't know anybody on assistance. Yeah, who can do that now?
Nobody. I mean, God, I have no idea what a West Virginia University education costs now, but it's a hell of a lot more than it was, you know, 30 years ago.
It wasn't that much.
Yeah, even out-of-state tuition. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Anyway, I got off on a little tangent, but that's just okay. You know, on the economy. So that was my Warren story, and I would like, I don't know if I'm the only one experiencing this, but I think it's really sad. And you know, your content today was just outstanding. And I have the grits for anyone who was interested. And they're the good grits.
Yeah.
But,
now, okay. I did tell someone today that if you're really, really, really in a bind, because she told me this is the fourth straight week that she's cooking grits, and I've created a monster. She said, I said, if you're really, really, really in a bind, yes, it is acceptable just to get past the Jones to use the instant microwavable grits. And what you do in that case is you throw a couple of slices of hot pepper cheese in with the instant grits and the water in the microwave. And they get real creamy and real tasty, and they set up real nice. And you can get past a bad spot with those. And they're never lumpy. Or at least they're not the way that Agnes fixes them.
Oh, hey! I don't know if you want to go down that road.
Well, no. I mean, it's her magic. I'm sure I would screw it up. But you know that. Oh, and you know, I did get to thinking about something, Todd.
What?
Because I see all these influencers on social media, especially over on Instagram, and you know, they would tell you that they eat they eat frosty dog turds. If the Frosty Dog Turd Corporation of America paid them enough money to say it, you'd have some scantily clad little half-starved darling in a bikini. Sitting there munching on a puppy loaf with frost on it, man. Oh man, dinner in the Pacific time zone just took a fucking lick. Probably shouldn't say lick. But they do that. And the nice thing is because there's no advertising money changing hands here. If I say that I like something, it's because I've bought it, I've tried it, and I've liked it. And you need not ever wonder if anything that you or me or anybody else who says they've bought, tried, whatever, and really liked is that's our actual opinion and not something that we were paid to say. So that was just another little moment that I thought about, you know, the value of this and of community sharing advice. Like, as you know, well, that Sam's dill mustard. you know, I think it was a
that sounds delicious.
It was a buck and a quarter a bottle, but I've never had anything better, a stripe of it down a hot dog, as mustards go.
But I had to go to Trader's today. I made a quick jaunt because I had to make a couscous run. I had a short list. And their raspberry, that fresh raspberry jam, jelly, whatever it is. Wait a minute, I'm in the refrigerator.
Oh, wait a minute! It's not just the Pacific time zone. I just got a note from your not too far away neighbor, David, in South Carolina, Stan, who says, "Thanks, I'm in the middle of making chicken salad." Thanks.
You know, turd. That's a terse and nasty word. I mean, you can almost smell it through the phone. So, well, and then he said lick.
And the frosty part, it's frosty.
God, like a turd Pop-Tart?
Yeah, turd-sickle.
It's great. So, damn.
Okay, let's try to ameliorate that, because the other thing that I found recently, there's a brand called Helados, H-E-L-A-D-O-S, and they're the Mexican-style paletas. Terrible pronunciation. Oh. But the little Mexican-style ice cream bars. And they're tiny. They're tiny. There's probably not 3 tablespoons of ice cream in this thing, so you don't have to feel horrible about it. But their variety pack has strawberry, mango, and coconut. And I got to tell you, I did not let the freezer go empty of those things over the last 7 days, because it may be the only thing that saved us during the so-called Appalachian heat wave. Those things are wonderful.
Are they fruit-based? They sound like
them. Well, they're ice cream, but it's fruit ice cream. It's mango ice cream, coconut ice cream, strawberry ice cream. And they're just smooth and lovely and creamy and flavorful. And they've got your average American ice cream bar beat a mile.
Well, you know, that's due to immigration. You know, these people, don't get me started on that. But, And before you kick me off the phone, I'm glad you cleared up. You must have been reading my mind. I think we have we're connected in our own Faraday cage or something. Because this when you talked about, it's been on my mind.
It's the hillbilly mind meld, Todd.
It must be. We're just Borgish, man. It was just Borgish. But all right. So when he turned around, I would have bet my life that Trump either had to go, you know, under for some surgery. Or, like you said, he was losing his, you know, he was in crisis, mental health crisis. But when you mentioned the fentanyl and then the amount, do you know how, that's enough? Do you understand the fentanyl, the micrograms?
Yeah, they said the average dose pack is a tenth of a gram.
That tenth of a gram will kill 20 people.
That's 15,000 dead people in a bag. I mean, my on-the-fly hillbilly cipher is always suspect, but I'm pretty sure that's 15,000 potential dead New Englanders.
That's not a little bit. You know, people hear a kilo, like, oh, okay.
And dude's gonna do 4 years and pay a $250,000 fine.
No, what is happening to us? And I want to ask you this question too. Since we're on the phone, I gotta go. My God, it's 8:15. And you gotta talk to people. All right. Was I wrong? Did I hear that now, in 10 years, the North ice pack is gonna melt?
Oh, you probably did.
That's crazy. I mean, I paused because that can't be. Man, if that's true, then we're fucked.
Right. And hence my observation about Chuck Schumer, Joe Manchin, Bernie. Yeah. By the way, James in Illinois says, Bob and Todd, your menstrual cycles are synced. Congratulations.
No, that's true, though.
And by the way, Steve in New York says, something you'd never hear. Mr. Bezos, I'm sorry, but because you booked through a third-party website, you don't earn the points. No. Jeff Bezos would just buy the goddamn hotel.
Well, what if he could? And he can't, so he did.
Oh, and Ron and Raleigh told me the countdown is on. 2.5 months until the Wegmans opens right next door to the Trader Joe's, which is 2 blocks from the Costco where I live.
Damn! Holy cow. Man, he's gonna be 500 pounds before it's over.
Man, if they got a Russo's, I think it's Russo's. Rouse's. Rouse's is still Louisiana, wow. Coastal Mississippi, coastal Alabama, and damn. Just damn.
All right, I have a question, Bob.
Yeah.
This is serious. Have you set up your flat grilling?
No, it's not set up yet. It kept threatening to rain, and I did not want to be in the middle of putting that thing together and get rained on. You know, because this time of year, you can get a pop-up shower just any time. Today was weird because it rained all day long. It was a soaker. Probably still raining.
I wish it would rain here, man. We need some rain.
I mean, this... yesterday when I was out running around, it was like it was autumn. There were like yellow, dried up brown and yellow poplar leaves blowing out onto the road. It's been so damn dry.
That's not good. So when it rains, it's going to run off.
Yeah, because the ground's hard panned. Todd, it's been a fantastic conversation, man.
Hey, Bob, take care. Thanks for taking... Yes, Bob. Thank you very much. And I would like to hear some feedback because about the racial thing I said. Because this is disturbing. And that was the real main reason I called. And once again, this particular... Anyway, all your programs. My God, the content that you hit on today. And shout out to Tracy and Lady B and everyone else. And my brother Steve. I hope Steve calls in and talks about Washington Journal.
Steve's been in a battle royal trying to get his damn TV to work. It's not the TV.
Oh, man.
It's not the TV. It's the cable.
Frontier. No, I'm just kidding.
No, Windstream, and I guess they're even worse.
Never heard of them.
Hard to conceive. All right, Todd, you take care, man.
You too.
All right. Later. Our buddy Todd, calling from South Carolina, Stan. Yeah, moments like that, you get a little frustrated, and you do wonder. So if you want to opine and tell Todd what you think, just shoot me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com, or use the headon.live access. Let's see who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, Jim. How about you?
Very well. How's your day going?
It's been kind of an inside day because it's been raining.
I noticed that.
Oh, did it pour over there, too?
Yeah, it is. I'm glad to see it. I enjoy rainy weather. I do. I love it.
It was badly needed. There's no doubt about that.
True.
The only problem.
I'm going to say something.
Only problem.
I'm going to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. So, let's eat.
No, I was just going to say, when it comes around to it, I'm going to have to mow the grass with a freaking bush hog.
They do have its disadvantage, does it not? No, I will say something that's absolutely anathema, but I cannot understand how people can even stand grits. I despise those things. I've never been in the field. I think they're nasty, and to hear people enthuse about them, well, that's great, but it's not for me.
Moving on. Yeah, I'm a grits guy. Can't help it. Raised on them. And, nutritionally, it's about a million times better for you than, say, like cream of wheat or, anything. Because of the nutritional wallop that corn packs.
Well, I like big hominy.
Oh, I love hominy.
As far as grits concerned, no thank you. But anyway, I made that point. Speaking of cooking and other things... I made cheese today and also made a wreath for Thanksgiving and Halloween.
Damn, you're getting out in front of the game.
Well, if you know, it'll get out in front of you. That's for sure. That is for absolute certain.
What kind of quiche?
You can make it different kinds, but you can use soft meat, bacon, ham, or whatever.
Yeah, the classic Lorraine is what? Bacon and Gruyere?
excuse me. I've got a post-nasal drip here. I just use a half and half cheese, any type of cheese. You can use any type, and onion, and then your spicy mustard.
Ooh, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. That'd give it a nice kick. Did you roll out your own pie crust, or did you cheat and go to the store?
Are you kidding me? I mean, that is ridiculous. I mean, if people want to do that, that's fine, but they can go back and they can cook it in an oven just powered by wood or whatever. I can't understand the reason for these puff pastry people. I never could understand that. Well, my mother used to make it, but I just can't be bothered. Now, you can buy a beautiful pie crust and brown it and put your ingredients in there, and there you go. And it smells wonderful.
Oh, I bet it does.
Yeah, it does. And so...
And it cooled off enough today that running the oven wouldn't just make your... wouldn't make it heat the house up to unbearable proportions.
Oh, no. No. It takes less than a half hour to cook, really. And so that's going to be a real problem. But, you know, you were talking about Senator Franken earlier. I wondered what happened to him and why it did happen so quickly. And I'm real sorry that that man resigned. And I'm very, very upset with the person who precipitated his resignation. What did he do? Grabbed a woman by the waist?
Well, no, it all starts with a right-winger named Leanne Tweeden, who was a friend of Roger Stone. You know who Roger Stone is?
Oh, yeah.
King Ratfucker. And she concocted this story around a goofy photograph done in very poor taste, in which they're on a C-130 or something, flying back from Afghanistan. And she appears to be asleep in a helmet and a flak jacket.
Okay, I think I remember something about that.
And he is reaching out as if to lay his hands on her flak jacket-covered breasts.
Oh dear!
Horrible taste.
That'll do it every time.
But it was taken by an Army photographer, who was there to document the USO tour, and it was put on a CD and mailed to everybody who was on the tour. She lied and said that it was that Al Franken had it put only on her disc of photographs, and she further lied and said that he wrote a lewd script. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to a USO show. I haven't, but I've seen clips of them. And they are generally vaudevillian, bawdy, raucous, crass, poor taste, burlesques.
Well, yeah, they can be.
And so she claimed that he wrote this script, this skit, specifically for her. When in fact, if the for-profit media had done any work at all, they would have found out that he had been doing this skit at a USO show for about 4 years, maybe three. But nobody in the multimillionaire for-profit media had time to fact-check her, even though people were screaming, "Oh my God, she's an associate of Roger Stone," or an associate of an associate. And so, led by people like Kirsten Gillibrand, who seemed to make the most political hay out of it, even though he had been an ally to her and had sponsored legislation and then turned it over to her to introduce regarding protecting women making allegations of sexual misconduct in the corporate workplace. She ran right up his back.
That's typical, Bob. You know that.
And then Chuck Schumer piled on and said he could either resign or he would turn the entire Democratic caucus would call for his resignation.
Yeah, I remember, yeah. It was just a real alternative thing. It really was.
And then another woman came forward and said, he made me feel uncomfortable because he put his hand around my waist in a photograph.
Aw, shit.
And there were six more similar. One was an inappropriate kiss, and another was he grabbed my butt at the state fair in a photograph.
Well, that'll do it to you, too, right there.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Russian hands and Roman fingers, or Roman hands and Russian fingers, whichever. Yeah. I was at a show in Germany, back in the early 80s, I think. And they had a general there, and he was like a Mustang colonel who had become a brigadier. And he was just a little rear ranks, and he had a couple of drinks, and he said, I encourage my men to get out and know the people and to fuck them. He said, if a man can't fuck, he ain't fit to fight. And next day, he was on his way back to D.C. Didn't take much for that to get along, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's just, even a couple of decades ago, that was
it was
intolerable.
Of course, I remember all the stuff about Edward Moore Kennedy. And, you know, that man really survived an awful lot. And he really came out to be a wonderful senator. And I do miss the likes of him very sorely.
Well, in the case... That's what scares me about the Senate is there are some great senators out there. Charles Schumer is not one of them. Isn't now, never has been.
Well, I never thought much of it either. But, you know, Senator Kennedy was really something else. And we don't know what we had, and we missed it. And I remember when he was sick, and he was not going to recover. But every 2 weeks or every week, I always dropped a card to his office. And they were picked up by his wife, Victoria, or Richie. And when he passed, I received a nice card from her. Not card, but letter. And his father, thank you. It was a funeral card. And I put it in my biography of Kennedy, the one that came out a couple years ago. And, you know, we don't see people like that anymore, right, really?
I don't think the current climate lends itself to statesmanship. You know, I didn't always agree with him. I disagreed with him a lot. But consider the difference between, say, Joe Manchin and the man he replaced, Robert Byrd.
Well, that's like chicken shit and chicken salad.
There's our second chicken salad reference of the evening. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there was at least a desire to elevate the idea of governance among or above the tawdry and the miscreant. But you can't say Robert Byrd's name without some Republican hollering Klein, when in fact that man repented of his membership, excoriated the organization, and spent the rest of his life denouncing them.
I love that.
But that's all. But that's all a Republican can holler is Robert Byrd was in the Klan.
That's all they do is scream like two word or three word sentences.
That's all they got.
Crazy. It's just not lock him up.
Send her back.
Yeah, excuse me. I've got this real bad summer cold. Damn,
oh,
crazy.
I hate those.
Indeed it is. But nonetheless, I haven't talked to you in a while. I thought I would just see how your trip to Philadelphia went. Apparently you enjoyed it.
Oh, it was wonderful to be immersed in that much history. You know, just at a stone's throw. To be across from the Quaker meeting house that drummed out my wife's ancestors. I looked up and I immediately sent her a picture and said, guess what's across the street from me? And she texted back, bastards.
Why did they drum that? Was she a Tory?
No. It had more to do with their theocracy. Because the story comes down to us is that the Quakers set up a tolerant community there where marginalized religious minorities could feel safe. And that's true as far as it goes, but they were theocrats of the First Order. So one of her ancestors was drummed out because they discovered, and this is a quote, she had been married by a priest and would not make acknowledgement in meeting. So
Catholic
she,
priest?
Yeah. Or an Episcopalian priest, for that matter.
Why? What's wrong with that?
Well, because those ecclesiastic divines were deemed by the Quakers to be filthy agents of, you know, Satan. And so she was expected by the Quakers to confess her sin of having been married by a priest. And she wouldn't do it. And so they drummed her out. Her multi-great-grandfather, John Bartram, was drummed out because, being as how he was a pal and a beer-drinking buddy of Benjamin Franklin, he and Franklin shared the same notion of the divine, and John Bartram just said the quiet part out loud to the effect that the idea of the Trinity was just silly. And that he could not countenance it. Because it violated every concept of his intellectual mind and didn't bear scrutiny. So he got drummed out.
What was he, a deist?
Yeah, well, I mean, a deist is probably the best way of describing it. That's like Franklin had honorary membership in the first synagogue, and was beloved by the congregation. But you know, they loved him because he said, "Do what you believe as you wish to believe."
Mm-hmm.
For this is America.
It's a pity more people couldn't take that attitude, and some of the ones who came over here, supposedly, to escape said persecution, became the persecutors themselves, to the point of being worse than the people for whom they fled.
Yeah, it often plays out that way. You know, consider Cromwell in England.
What an asshole. I have nothing good to say about that man. Nothing.
No, but except for that one quote, it comes in handy ever so often when you have a Republican Congress.
Here it comes. Go.
How does it begin? You have
your part. I say have done with you. You just done no little good for whatever time you spent here doing. Worse than that, you can do a lot better than I.
Yeah, and in the name of God, go.
Uh huh.
He said, dismissing.
Depart,
the
I say.
Yeah, depart, I say. In the name of God, go. That one does come in handy.
Indeed it does.
But
I could not.
Please.
I just thank God for the restoration of Charles II. God bless him. He lived as he died as he lived in bed. He must be quite a character. Remember that thing with, who was it, in restoration? Oh, my goodness. I can't think of the guy's name. He played a minister to Charles II. Marable. Yeah, help me out here, Mom.
You caught me out.
Likewise.
I'm a little weak on my restoration. I bet I'll get emails overnight telling me who.
Yeah, you should. But he played the minister who was exalted by Charles II and then fell out of favor. And then because he helped during the plague, then Charles II was played by Sam Neill. He was brought back to favor and given his old estate, M&O, back. It's a beautiful movie, it really is. It's very sad in a certain way, too. But, the Restoration people, thank God they came back because England was hardly buried at all. I don't think it was really buried in the first place, considering its history. I saw this thing on this afternoon on Richard III, and they actually found his body.
Yeah, yeah.
And found the exaggerated scoliosis and the wounds that he received in battle. And, you know, Richard III, I don't think was such a bad person at all.
Well, he was vilified as a function of an ongoing
the Tudors.
Propaganda campaign by the Tudors, right.
Yeah. And so, you know, apparently there's a Richard III Society. And, you know, they've always tried to refurbish his memory. And so it was an interesting program for how they did it. Beaverstown, they had one of his survivors, and they lit the remains to DNA. A guy from Canada who was living in England. But I just think you're too far off the point there. I just have to mention that. But anyway, I guess you've got other people who like to call. I've never been one to tie up a line. I don't believe in it. I think it's bad.
All right, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, and enjoy that quiche.
Will do.
All right.
Likewise. Bye.
Take care. That's our buddy Jim calling from not too far away. Let's see. I have some thanks to send out. Ralph's challenge got met. So thanks go out to Henry and to Will in Chicago. Thank you very kindly. And to Thomas, who says, have a dash and a dime. Thank you, Thomas. So all told, that means that we are down to 320 to finish the week. So thank you all very kindly. And with a few minutes left in the program, maybe we can get it down below $300. That'd be awesome. And I'll stop sweating that final, stop sweating the internet bill. So there's a story, and it's been a few days coming. Because it's the story and the resolution at one and the same time. I don't know if you saw it, but a 14-year veteran of the Gretna, Louisiana Police Department couldn't help himself, got on social media, and referred to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as a vile idiot, and then said she, and this is a quote, needs a round, and I don't mean the kind she used to serve. In other words, he was advocating for the cold-blooded murder of a member of Congress. Well, it took a few days, but Arthur Lawson, the police chief of Gretna, Louisiana, held a news conference today and said that both Charlie Rispoli, the guy who did it, and another officer who liked the post were canned. He said, it is an embarrassment to our department and very, very disappointing. Responding to the whole thing, AOC said, this is Trump's goal when he uses targeted language and threatens elected officials who don't agree with his political agenda. It's authoritarian behavior. The president is sowing violence. He's creating an environment where people can get hurt, and he claims plausible deniability. All of which is absolutely true. And one hopes, I fear, but one hopes that these guys won't be able to get jobs in police forces anymore. But one wonders. Because there may be a police chief down the road who just down the road who says, you're exactly the kind of God-fearing Americans that we want right here on our force. So thanks to Sparky for reminding me of that. I wanted to make sure that, because on one hand, it's good to see the right kind of resolution take place. On the other hand, it's a stirring example of the kind of vicious fascist hatred that this jiggling adipose wad of fear and insecurity and hate generates on a daily basis in order to try to bolster and keep his equally racist base fired up. Let's see, a couple of notes. Darlene in Connecticut writing, found the New Yorker article and gobbled it up during your first hour. That Franken mock-grabbing Tweeden's breast was one of many gag photos taken that night based on another skit Franken and Tweeden were doing, and it was actually meant to make Franken look like an asshole. That was part of the gag, and these USO tours are meant to dwell in tons of raunch to delight the soldiers. There's something wrong with Tweeden, where she's confusing jokes with reality, and the radio station where she worked was flailing and looking for a boost in its ratings. By the way, it was owned by Cumulus Media, the radio station in L.A. It was a struggling right-wing radio station that tried to bolster its flagging fortunes on being the most maggoty radio station in Southern California. Interestingly, that same Cumulus Media, and this is a news story from today, ripped from the pages of the headlines, that same Cumulus Media banned its own radio stations from airing an interview with Pete Buttigieg that was done by a reporter for one of its own stations. They banned their own stations from running an interview that they did. Why? Because Pete Buttigieg is gay. Now, they didn't say that outright, but sometimes they actually succeed in not saying the quiet parts out loud. So I found it interesting that there was a Cumulus Media reference in the Jane Mayer piece, and then, bang, Cumulus Media behaving shitty again. Another good reason to repeal the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Schumer, Darlene says, is a horrible senator, and there's this little thing called karma coming back to bite Gillibrand. Franken should have had his day in the Senate Ethics Committee hearing. It is clear that this has devastated him, requiring therapy and medication. Maybe he will one day find the wherewithal to run for Senate again. Maybe this article will be one positive step in that direction. Still goes to show that Democrats are quite capable of fucking up a one-float parade. Mm-hmm. And all because they perceived it would somehow benefit the race against Roy Moore. Because that's part of the whole pastiche as well. Note coming in from Lady B. Hey, Todd, she says. I agree with you that racism is a poison that can easily seep into young people's mentality. Lately, every slight from a white person seems to hurt more nowadays. It fucking sucks to have to feel so defensive all the time. And for those who can't wrap their minds around feeling that way, think of it as a black person's defense mechanism. If we don't get suspicious of folks being rude to us, we risk being taken advantage of, like being overcharged for something, or getting a sloppy and cold food order. Or getting the open bag of grits thrown into your bag when you're not looking. Yeah. My siblings and I call that the black order. Your fries always seem colder, and the bills always seem to have extra charges. One of my emails is black chick white accent. That gift has served me well both in radio and phone interviews. People treat you differently when you don't sound ethnic. It's the in-person meetings that always let you know who you're really dealing with. Again, it may be hard to understand why some folks seem to automatically jump to the conclusion that their situation may be racist. Maybe you don't have to understand, but you should. But it's real. Slights from whites are naturally magnified by blacks. It's a survival instinct. How do you think we managed to last this long in this country? By the way, I like grits, buttered, with salt and pepper. I hate hominy. But that's the thing. Grits come from hominy. That's why they're hominy grits. And the coolest thing about studying grits and hominy is that you get to learn a really cool word from an ancient language. Nixtamalization. 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 And that's the process whereby corn kernels are soaked with lime in lime water, and they puff up like that, and it makes the hard outer hulls come off, and then it can be dried and ground and otherwise processed. And you got to make hominy with nixtamalization process before you grind them into grits. Because grits and cornmeal are not the same thing. Hominy, piping hot, butter, salt, black pepper, ding. Yeah. Say hi, says Lady B, and thanks to all the head-on homies for me. And The Nightfly is a great fucking album. It's one of my favorites. Yeah, it's the production values are exquisite, and the lyrics are evocative, and yeah, The Nightfly. The title track, sure. So that's, once again, one of Lady B's incisive observational emails. And so how shall we wrap this up? Yesterday, you know, because I never stopped doing show prep. Yesterday, I spent too much of the precious, finite time of my existence watching the interview that Chris Wallace did with Stephen Goebbels Miller. It was nauseating, but he, Chris Wallace, was roundly praised for challenging Stephen Miller. I'm going to run a little bit of this, because here in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century in the United States of America, I want to just point out what qualifies as a searing challenge to a serial liar, a racist, a xenophobe, and a fascist.
I fundamentally disagree with the view that if you criticize somebody and they happen to be a different color skin, that makes it a racial criticism. In fact, you saw from Congresswoman Presley this week that she was saying that if you're brown, you have to speak like a brown person. If you're black person, that's the kind of ideology the president is rejecting. If you want to have a colorblind society, it means you can criticize immigration policy, you can criticize people's views, you can ask questions about where they're born, and not...
You can goose step up and down the street. Yeah, right, we get it. We get it, doctor.
Not have it be seen as racial.
And can you also say, go back where you came from?
Notice that. Racial. Not racist. That, too, is a right-wing trope. Racial, not racist. Words mean things.
First of all, and I'm glad that we can now get to what I think we really want to focus on, with the send her back chant, the president was clear that he disagreed with it.
He was clear after the fact. He let it go on for 13 seconds, and it was only when the chant diminished that he started talking again.
Right,
I promise I'm going to give you, but he said nothing there or in his tweet after the rally that indicated any concern about the chant.
Right, but I want to get to the core issue. The president was...
That kind of was the core issue there, Steve. He stood, and there's a word, and no one has used it, I think, but me. It's not a fancy word. But what he did during those 13 seconds He basked, B-A-S-K-E-D, he basked in the adoration of that furious fascist mob, screaming at the tops of their lungs till their spleens ached, "Send her back, send her back, send her back." He basked in that. It made him feel warm and loved. It made him feel powerful and strong. He basked.
Clear that he said he disagreed with that tweet. But the core issue is that all the people in that audience and millions of patriotic Americans all across this country are tired of being beat up, condescended to, looked down upon, talked down to by members of Congress on the left in Washington, D.C.
Then don't be fascists. Because you see, fascists deserve to be looked down upon, talked down to, condescended to, despised, driven from polite society. That is what fascists deserve, because left to their own deserts, they will rip a country to shreds. Left to their own devices, not deserts. Words. And the only way you have of stopping fascism is stopping it everywhere you see it.
And their allies in many quarters of the media. And let's get specific about it. You saw the quotes from Representative Omar saying some people did something about 9/11. And yes, if you watch it in context, it's worse. You saw the quotes from Representative Omar talking about how, oh, well, we talk about Al-Qaeda in a menacing tone. And by the way, she's...
Okay, this is sort of the point now. He challenged, Chris Wallace challenged him on one thing, the 13 seconds, and to send her back. The rest, he lets Stephen Miller, this shitty little Nazi, this shitty little Sonderkommando, this shitty little capo, then monologue, unchallenged, for minutes on end. And that is supposed to be some sort of great journalism, when I would submit it is not journalism at all. It's knob polishing.
Giggling throughout this interview, but we don't talk about the army in a menacing tone. And yes, if you watch it in context, which I have, it's even worse. And perhaps most shocking of all were the comments made by Representative Ocasio-Cortez saying that our border agents are running concentration camps, and therefore they are Nazis, and therefore everyone in that audience, and you and me and everyone who supports our Border Patrol, are by extension Nazi sympathizers. We support Nazis if we support border agents. But I have one more point on that I have to say.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, he was going to push back, but nah, he's going to let him keep monologuing his little Nazi monologue.
I'm a Jew. As a Jew, as an American Jew, I am profoundly by the comments from Ocasio-Cortez. It is a historical smear. It is a sinful comment. It minimizes the death of 6 million of my Jewish brothers and sisters. It minimizes their suffering. And it paints every patriotic law enforcement officer.
Right. And Chris Wallace tries to maybe burp out a phoneme. When what is being begged for in that moment is to say, yeah, Steve, sure. You're a Jew. We get it. And your Jewish relatives, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, have signed a letter denouncing you and stating that were your policies in effect when your family emigrated, you'd all be dead. But Chris Wallace can't do that because, well, that wouldn't be cricket now, would it? That wouldn't be fighting according to the Marcus of Queensbury rules. You can't fight with the Marcus of Queensbury rules with these thugs. Because they don't.
officer as a war criminal. And those are the comments, Chris, that we need to be focusing on.
Well, the president says that the four congresswomen hate America. Here he is.
I can tell you this. You can't.
Yeah, so this goes on for 10 minutes. The program, I'd have to go overtime. But you've got enough there to recognize that, no, Chris Wallace did not burn Stephen Miller to the ground. Chris Wallace pushed back ever so gently, played a couple of clips of Nitwit Nero, and then let this vile piece of filth, Stephen Miller, monologue on. Something similar happened over on CBS. Margaret Brennan interviewed Liz Dick in a Bad Wig Cheney. And Liz got to monologue. Eventually, it got bad enough that they just cut the interview. Which is better, I suppose, than just letting it run, just letting it run its toxic course. That interview ran 6 minutes as opposed to the 9:43 with Chris Wallace and Stephen Miller. And Liz Cheney is obviously being primed. I mean, she's number three in the House now. She's being primed to run for Senate from Wyoming, and she's also being primed as presidential timber. And she has to be challenged for her vicious, Cheney-esque, hateful, snide Republicanness before she can get her claws into the United States of America. There are little brown babies the world over who might just now be learning to crawl, whose lives are threatened by the possibility that Liz Cheney might get to something approaching power. Because when Cheneys get near power, little brown babies die in heaps of bombed out rubble. And that's a fact. And so it's time to get out of here. Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. We've got 3:20 to go to finish the week in fundraising. Note coming in from James in Illinois. Going back to what Stephen Miller was saying about core issues, James says, no. My core issue, our core issue is we're right, they're wrong. I might editorially tweak that to say my issue, our core issue is we're correct, they're fascists. Yeah. So, that's it for the evening. Thanks for everything you do to keep the program on the air. Thanks to all the people who contribute to do that. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. and always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.